And good afternoon, Trinidad and Tobago. This is Freedom 106.5 FM. We welcome you to Lunchtime Doctor program. With your Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Safia Mohammed. It is simulcast on Freedom 106.5 FM, Singeed 106.1 FM, Vibe CT 105 FM, and Sky 99.5 FM. Brought to you by Superfarm, your prescription of trust. Good afternoon, Dr. Mohammed.
Good afternoon, Govin, and good afternoon to all those who are locked in to your Lunchtime Doctor. This is the program where we dissect those medical challenges, offer solutions and help that will guide you to optimize your health. And of course, we welcome you to share what's on your lunchtime plate. Let us know what are your health values. We'll give you that consult right away. I am Dr. Safia Mohammed, here to guide you in the next hour as your Lunchtime Doctor.
That's right. The Lunchtime Doctor program is on with Dr. Safia Mohammed. You can call with your medical questions and concerns 627-3223-625-2257 and your messages on WhatsApp 3061065. Dr. Mohammed, we've got a text message already in. Good day, Doctor. What causes sinuses and what can help it? Can humidifiers help? Thank you.
So that is a very good question. I love that we have such interested callers. You ask specifically, and I'll answer the last part first, about humidifiers. Yes, the humidifiers definitely help, but let's explain why and what causes this sinus or sinus infection. It starts first and foremost with, if you were to join me in an anatomy class, say, looking at the structure of the face. Within the structure of the face, there are many pockets. That pockets is where there is this air-filled area, and that's what is called a sinus. Now, when there's a buildup of mucus, or let's say you go into a space where you feel different allergies are being stimulated, then they will not only have air in that pocket, but now we get a buildup of pathogens, germs, or mucus. And that's where the sinus infection builds up. It starts with, of course, the nasal passageway, because all of the sinus pockets are connected to the nasal passageway. And that's why your humidifier or even a home nebulizer can indeed help. Now, if I were to give you this dissection of the face, you will see connecting to the nasal passage just at the front of the forehead there, just at the areas of the cheekbone. There's several spaces. So there are what we call the nasal cavity that leads into the maxillary sinus, the frontal sinus, your ethmoid sinuses. Where now, if there's that buildup of infection or pathogens, we need to clear it out. So how does the humidifier help? The humidifier will help in getting moisture to the area. If the mucus becomes dry, now it is moistened and it can be easily expelled from the body. Sometimes it may be need to flush out, and that's why a nebulizer, or you will see persons say they're doing a nasal cleanse or a nasal flush, or they're clearing their sinuses. All of that would help. But again, I would say be guided by your healthcare professional if you are deciding on a nasal flush or that nasal cleanse. And of course, purchasing your humidifier or even getting a nebulizer. All of that helps in reducing the complications of a sinusitis. Hope that answers the question.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mohammed. And of course, you can call the hotline number 627-3223-625-2257 to get your medical questions answered by your Lunchtime Doctor, Dr. Safia Mohammed. You could also send us your questions on WhatsApp 3061065. Dr. Mohammed, I would have sent you one of the questions on WhatsApp, a bit of medical terminology that I'm sure I'll get wrong. So take it away.
Myalgic encephalomyelitis. Yes, we do see that in Trinidad and Tobago. So I'll read the question. Can the doctor share info on myalgic encephalomyelitis, CFS, in Trinidad and good safe ways to treat it, please, especially if severe myalgic encephalomyelitis and what not to do. Thank you. So that's a question the caller just sent in. Let's explain exactly what this is. First and foremost, yes, it is treated in Trinidad and Tobago, but definitely by a specialist. Anytime you hear something called encephalo, we're dealing with the brain. In this case, we're dealing with, and particularly myalgic, which is myalgia as in the muscles. It's more now how the brain interconnects with all of the muscles in the body and this wide range of symptoms that presents us chronic fatigue syndrome, CFS. So yes, it is treated in Trinidad. It'll be very much multifactorial, where there is a neuromuscular involvement or a neurologist. There may even be a psychologist in light of the fact that it is very much well-being in play and is, again, you're dealing with the brain. It's more common. We see this more common in women, and we see this more common in women with autoimmune related disorders. Now, how serious can this be? It can be a serious, long-term, complicated illness if not diagnosed correctly. And this is why it's so important that you're treated not by just a random healthcare professional, but someone who has that expertise, a neurologist particular. You want to also know that it's someone that will not misdiagnose, because there have been persons, because they're presenting with fatigue, with exertion, they just assume it's either thyroid related, cardiovascular related. So this tends to be a diagnosis of exclusion, where we not only do a series of different investigations, but we also interview. We interview you, we interview your family, because it certainly can affect the family. What we do in terms of treatment, I'm so sorry to be the one to say, there's no actual cure per se for myalgic encephalomyelitis, but what we do is we treat the symptomatology and we treat the trigger causes. So once we're able to identify if there's an associated trigger, then we certainly treat those. I would definitely again suggest you engage with a neurologist in getting that treatment. Hope that answers your question.
All right, doctor, good afternoon. Base is in here. Of course, our numbers are 6273223, 625-2257, and 3061065 on your WhatsApp messages. Lunchtime Doctor, of course, we're on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangin 106.1, Sky 99.5, and Vibe City 105. We're being sponsored, of course, by Super Farm. All right, let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon. Yes, sir, good afternoon. Go ahead, ask a question.
Yes, afternoon, Doctor. Afternoon, yes. I have been, a doctor prescribed omega-3 for me to take, all right? But recently there's been a video going wrong where they have this person cutting the omega-3 capsule and placing it on styrofoam. And the content of the omega-3 capsule was dissolving the styrofoam. We want to know if that is something that is safe to use, or is it that the omega-3 is somewhat bad, or if it's, I just want to know if it's safe to use still.
So thank you so much for bringing that to my attention. I certainly would love to see that video. If you can shoot that video across to our Freedom WhatsApp number, that would be very beneficial. Let me talk a little bit about omega-3s. Again, there are different pharmaceutical companies that produce different medications, but I'm pretty certain the healthcare professional that prescribed the omega-3 in particular did not think about in terms of that particular video that you may have seen, right? Because I myself didn't see it, so I'm glad you brought it to my attention. There are indeed a host of benefits for omega-3. Now, it is one of those recommended micronutrients. It's not a prescribed medication because it's very much over-the-counter. So it's not a medication that we need to prescribe. I'm certain it was recommended If it is, you are a patient with cardiovascular, any sort of cardiovascular concerns. But keep in mind, it must have a certain limit to the amount. And of course, yes, there are huge health benefits. Now, when it comes to this particular video and what it did to the styrofoam, I'm really at loss because I need to see it. While there are medications that are strong, there are medications that can have side effects. I don't believe there's a medication that will dissolve styrofoam. Again, let's not fall prey to some of these persons that create videos just to get likes, just to get attention. I'm certain it may be not a medical person. I'm certain there was no FDA involvement. It could even be that they staged it. Now, I'm saying all of this because I have not viewed the video. Again, I want us to exercise a level of really kind of being critical in what we're seeing here. And of course, who would have prescribed your medication? So you have to look at all the information presented in front of you and then make your decision. I certainly hope that video comes to my phone so I can certainly review it, because it always is very perturbing when persons who shouldn't be creating such hysteria is doing such. But thank you so much for bringing it to our attention. It certainly will be addressed.
All right, good day, Doctor. How does zinc help with the prostate gland?
It's a great question. Now, zinc is one of those micronutrients that also, just like the omega, has a host of health benefits when it comes to nutrient deficiencies. What we have seen with our patients with prostate disease is that one of the things that they tend to have is a zinc deficiency. So is zinc good for your prostate gland? Yes, it certainly is important in terms of the role it plays in protecting the functions of the prostate gland. You see, the prostate gland actually stores zinc. So when it stores zinc, or when rather there's a deficiency of the zinc, it can now, when the prostate gland doesn't have the zinc, it can now be at risk of either not having the proper metabolic functions. It could be at risk of shrinking. It can be even at risk of trying to compensate where it enlarges. So this is where zinc plays a role in the prostate gland overarching support structure. So yes, it's one of those micronutrients that is crucially important and important to your prostate gland. Hope that answers the question.
All right. And Doc, putting into that omega-3 and styrofoam, I just did a quick Google there. You just type in omega-3 and styrofoam, and
yes,
they will
definitely
say, does fish oil dissolve styrofoam? So it's kind of like what not to take. Does omega-3 do to styrofoam? So you can check it out. All right. Let's take this call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Doctor. Sorry. I have had a cancer screening test result here, and I'm a bit worried about it. I see the CEA result is 6.00, unit NG/ML, the range is 3, and under flags, they have a capital H. Am I supposed to be worried about this?
So thank you so much for bringing that to the forefront. I can imagine seeing a result definitely will put a spoke in that concern and increase that fear level. So CEA, carcinoembryonic antigen, can be elevated for more than one thing, not only cancer. Again, we as doctors don't try to treat a value, we treat the patient. So I would first start, don't be worried. First thing you're doing, however, is whoever would have recommended the test, you need to return to them, or at least to any healthcare professional, in light of any additional, if there are symptoms that you may be experiencing. There can be polyps within the gut, which are non-cancerous, which will also elevate the CEA. There can also be if they say one had an investigation, if you had a sigmoidoscopy or any sort of scope from the perianal area, that could also elevate the CEA outside of being carcinogenic. So please don't be worried up front. There can be other reasons. If, however, you're experiencing other associated symptoms, I will suggest you go sooner rather than later to your healthcare professional, because that would mean we can pick something up in the early stage and administer treatment. So let's not worry about it. Let's act upon it. Hope that answers your question.
All right, folks, of course, 627-3223, 625-2257. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Super Farm. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Dr. Mohammed. I had an X-ray done recently following the removal of a plate and screws from my ankle, an ankle injury I had, a fracture. The X-ray showed up, soft tissue calcification on the calf and also the sole of the foot, the affected foot. Now, I would like to think I have too much calcium in my body. Now, how do I deal with this? I know I have a lot of cheese. I'm addicted to cheese because I'm prepared to bin that. I also eat a lot of green leafy vegetables, kale, and other things with calcium in it. Now, do I have to avoid calcium-rich foods? Thank you.
Thank you so much. Now, definitely, when it comes to these complex situations, it's ones we advise to really have that consultation with your direct healthcare professional, because they will also know your entire medical journey. But let me try to answer as specific as I can with the limited information that was shared. I can only imagine your level of distress, having now to adjust your nutrition, avoid certain foods, which are foods that you eat all the time. But yes, if the calcium levels are high, then we certainly need to minimize the calcium intake. Now, some of the foods that would have a high calcium intake can also be dairy. When it comes to things like kale, the calcium percentage within it is a lot lower. So what I would suggest is, if there is your blood investigation that shows your calcium levels are way too high, then the adjustment can not only be nutritionally, but there are also medications to help bring down that increased calcium levels that the healthcare professional can prescribe. And also, you can make those nutritional changes. As you suggested, yes, you can shift to reducing the amount of kale, shift to reducing the dairy products, so that you're reducing your calcium intake. However, do it in conjunction with the advice by a healthcare professional, because we wouldn't want your calcium levels to get so depleted that it now puts your bones in another predicament. So I hope that answers your question. Again, it's a layered question, a layered concern, because there are a host of other interplaying factors there. Hope that answers.
All right. Good afternoon, Doctor. What's your opinion on colonias or colon ingression for regular patients with constipation? If yes, how often should it be done annually?
Yes. Now, we do have patients who have constipation and need to have some sort of intervention. That colonoscopy in particular is one of the investigations that we do to be able to identify if there's any sort of block, tumor, growth, or what exactly is happening in the entire, what we see is the large intestine. So the colonoscope, or your large intestine, evaluates the colons in particular. And that particular medication, that colon ice that they mentioned, can help or fast track if someone has a constipation. Again, some of these things have huge side effects. So I would always encourage all of our listeners to ensure that a healthcare professional is guiding that journey. Hope that answers the question.
All right. Doctor, can you give any advice on this illness? Epidermolysis bullosa.
Now, this epidermolysis bullosa is indeed rare. However, we have seen it. I remember the first time I saw it was in a pediatric case in the general hospital. It is very difficult to manage. We had to have a plastic surgeon, a dermatologist, and the pediatrician managing this particular case of epidermolysis bullosa. And it's so rare. The skin may blister very easily. The skin may tear off. It may also develop a sore. It may develop an infection. We actually treat epidermolysis bullosa as if it's a cancer. Not that it's a cancer, but when I say we treat it like that, we treat it with a level of intensity and care because it needs multiple layers of treatment. There are different types of epidermolysis bullosa. They're the more severe types, and thankfully, they're the more common types, which are the simpler. So there's actually one called epidermolysis bullosa simplex, and then the junctional epidermolysis bullosa, which is the more severe one. We would want that the patient have a biopsy of the skin, where a pathophysiologist is now going to look at it and be able to identify what exactly would the treatments be. Most times than not, this is genetic in nature. Most times than not, it can affect not just the skin, but can also affect the scalp, can affect the mucosal layers within nose, many different areas. And it can be quite debilitating. So one, it needs a multidisciplinary team. Most times than not, it's an autoimmune disease. So we utilize it in medications that are similar to the medications we treat cancer with. You also need to be special attention to taking care of the skin. It's almost like that situation of the boy in the bubble. These epidermolysis bullosa patients, we literally need to bubble them, because if there are blisters on their skin, even the air, if there are pathogens, can affect the skin and cause sores. Hope that answers the question. If you are a patient that have epidermolysis bullosa, my heart really goes out to you, and I really hope you have a team of persons supporting and surrounding you.
All right, folks. And of course, feel free to message our other frequencies and they will send your messages right here to us. They're testing my vocabulary today, Doc. Hello, question for the lunchtime doctor. Can a liver hemangioma cause complications during pregnancy?
It certainly can, but it all depends on what lobe of the liver it is. So this liver hemangioma is most times or not non-cancerous. And first and foremost, I want to bring that forward. Cancerous. It is indeed benign. And when we say benign, it's just this coagulation or clump of blood vessels. It tends to come out of the hepatic artery. And that's where it becomes a little complicated for a pregnancy. Because remember, in a pregnancy, your blood volume is almost doubled. So the blood volume is increased anywhere to 1.5 to 2. If there is indeed a hepatic hemangioma, your obstetrician needs to know. But again, it is non-cancerous, so it will more be for observation than a fear in terms of needing to be excised. Hope that answers the question.
All right, folks, 627-3223-625-2257. You're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor with the kind compliments of Super Farm. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. Hello?
Yes, good afternoon. You're live on air.
I suffered with sciatica nerve a couple of years ago. I had a flare-up, right, really bad. I had electromagnetic therapy and acupuncture done. But I have realized that within the past year, I have had, like, small flare-ups that last between 1 to 2 days. What is the best vitamin or something, you know, that you could take to, you know, to help with this? All right,
so,
thank you.
Thank you so much. So the thing about sciatica pain, it is more about the ergonomics than a multivitamin. That sciatica pain means that there's some sort of compression, either the level of the spine, the lumbar spine, or within the iliac, that part of the hip where the nerves are passing through, the iliac bone. Definitely, things that will help is stretching. You would need to not only engage in some sort of physiotherapy, but you would need to know exactly, if you can, where is the level of the compression. Not only is the physiotherapy helpful, but that stretching helps relieve the pain. Sometimes we need to actually even induce a level of a corticosteroid shot at the area of the nerve root to help ease that pain. One injection, sometimes as frequent as once a month or more frequent than that, depending on how severe the pain is. Anti-inflammatory agents, other corticosteroids, even painkillers, all of this, because that's how bad the sciatica pain can be. I've seen patients get, some of my patients, they have a significant relief for the corticosteroid shot, and they have significant prevention of return of that pain with physiotherapy. But keep in mind, I want you to bear that it's also what plays a role is your sitting, how you sit, how you may even lie down. So even if you're at a desk for a whole day, that is going to worsen your sciatica. You want to make sure you integrate, you take a little pause and get up and stretch, stretch your nerve, stretch your leg out. There's specific exercises, especially within the yoga field, that helps relieve the sciatica pain. So again, I hope you're getting proper guidance. Yes, I understand how debilitating that sciatica pain can be, and I hope just this little bit of information would have given you some resolve.
All right, let's take a call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, doctor. My question is, does acidic food aggravate your arthritis? I've noticed a kind of trend, you know, like I used to love my citrus, but now my grapefruit juice, orange juice, whatever. And even if I eat like spicy food, so what have you, I get a lot of pain on my arm, well, ankles and so on. That's how it's not off way.
So you hit the nail on the head. Exactly what you said there, sir, is very, very correct. Yes, and this is when too much of something is not good. While I love grapefruit juice, after a while I have to take a pause and allow a detox, because yes, there may be that swelling on the ankle, you may feel a discomfort in the knees even. So can acidic foods affect your joints? Yes, because it worsens any sort of inflammatory reaction. But here's what happens. Sometimes it may have been a previous injury that you may have succumbed before, and now when you're having either that grapefruit juice, the citrus juice, a little more than necessary, the acid forming particles within the body, which would normally neutralize it, there isn't enough to buffer the amount of either the acid from the grapefruit juice or whatever, and then in conjunction with the inflammatory reaction. So here's where you can neutralize. There is indeed that alkaline based water. So when I know that I'm having way too much, because I am a real big fan of grapefruit juice, when I recognize I'm having too much grapefruit juice, I tend to calibrate it, or as they say, buffer it with the alkaline based water. You want to, however, just keep in mind that there's some foods that have a higher acid content, things like tomatoes, and then there's some foods that have a higher alkaline content. What are those foods that have a higher alkaline content? Good old lovely avocados has a nice good alkaline content. Your sprouts, your kale, those things have a good alkaline value. So you can actually buffer the amount of acid you have in your body by your nutrition. Other things that increase the acid in the body is anything that's processed. So artificial sweeteners, refined foods, processed foods, all of that is going to increase the amount of acids in the body. So not only would the grapefruit juice worsen the acidic content in the body, some of these other processed things will. Hope that answers your question.
All right. Well, Doc, we have something in common there, but I love grapefruit juice.
But again, everything in moderation, the things that are healthy.
Mm-hmm. I've cut down a lot on my juice intake, though. All right, let's get another call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. I would like to know what is the treatment for polyps.
So I only heard a piece of that. What is the
what is the treatment? Treatment for polyps. She said polyps.
Okay. The treatment. Now, it really depends on where the polyp is. There can be a nasal polyp. There can be a polyp in the colon. So it depends on what the polyp is. And it also, here's the thing that I need you to be mindful of. A polyp can very quickly become a cancerous cell. So those in the colon, so there's something called familial adenomatous polyps, FAP, and that can become cancerous. So it depends on what is the type of polyp. If it's a nasal polyp, based on where it is, we can easily go in and extract them. If it's within the colon, we can use the scope. A gastroenterologist would be that particular individual, either through the mouth or through the anal canal, and of course excise the polyp or take a biopsy to know if it's cancerous or not. Treatment tends to be surgical because most of these polyps tend to be intrinsic. Hope that answers the question.
All right, good afternoon, Doc. And this is drinking club soda unhealthy. I drink it when I want some fizz and don't want to drink other soft drinks.
So club soda, while there isn't much sugar to that, not just sugars, but your carbonated sugars, your fats, when you look at the much calories to it, yes, there are some harmful benefits to club soda. It gives you this unnatural feeling of fullness. And because it's like empty calories, you can now, the body, the stomach, can release these acids because it's trying to digest the club soda. And it can worsen if you have a reflux. It can worsen if they're peptic ulcers. So yes, club soda is useful. It does indeed help with digestion. There are persons who always complain about they having gas, and they have a club soda, and then next they're belching really well and they've eased that gassy feeling or that bloating. But keep in mind, again, too much of anything is not best. Club soda is absolutely not recommended to quench your thirst. Water is. So here's what I would suggest. Switch out the club soda for water. If you want to, and yes, this might sound a little strange, you can actually dilute your club soda. You can have your club soda with some natural juice. You can have your club soda with even coconut water. So you can dilute the club soda. Too much of club soda in your system, because there's a host of sodium and magnesium and potassium in it, can be problematic. Hope that answers your question.
All right. We have somebody with some readings here, Doc. Cholesterol, it's 219, right? The HDL, 59.20. Triglycerides, 99.30. The LDL, 139.94. The AST, 15.0. The ALT 17.0.
And
okay. The, all right. The plasma chemistry fasting glucose 89. And there is an asterisk by the cholesterol and the.
Oh, definitely. LDL. What was the fasting glucose?
The fasting glucose is 89.
Right. So because another key thing you mentioned there, because this is a fasting glucose, most likely this is a fasting cholesterol. Yes, that cholesterol is elevated. At 219, I am concerned. We actually want your total cholesterol under 180 and we want your LDL under 120. So that's about 20 points we need to drop it. However, the other values, your fasting glucose at 89 millimoles per deciliter is excellent. You're under the 100. I'm great with that. And here's easy, quick things you can do to get your cholesterol down. First and foremost, let's improve our hydration. Let's watch those saturated fried foods. Just cut down on it. Switch it out to some healthier substitutes. Watch not just the fried foods, but your saturated fats. Let's just say potato. If you happen to love fries, no problem. It's kind of hard to switch out from fries. Try to bake them instead. Try to have the sweet potato versions. Try to have cassava fries instead. If you like, and again, most Trinidadians, they love their doubles. Try to reduce the amount. You know, sometimes you see persons having doubles, three and four doubles in one morning. Try to cut it down a little bit. Two, have the cucumbers in your doubles. So you're adding a level of fiber. So whatever you're doing, cut down that cholesterol. Because here's a complication. Increased cholesterol will cause deposits in your arteries and put you at a risk of a stroke and a heart attack. And let's just say for that blood test you would have done, it may have costed you $200-$300. If there's a heart attack, that's a couple $100,000. So by simple measures of just reducing that cholesterol, you're not only saving your life, but you're also managing the possible complications and financial troubles that it could bring. So let's make sure we continue to look at your values. You did really great in knowing what your values are. To all of our listeners, you know, I encourage you, know your numbers. So thank you so much to the caller, person who messaged in and sent in your numbers. Check us back in about 2 weeks' time. Let us know what your values are. Let us know what health habit you have changed and what you are now having a little bit more of and a little bit less of. Hope that answers the question.
All right, 17 minutes away from 1 o'clock. We're just going through some WhatsApp messages here. Hi, Doc. What do you recommend for low blood pressure, hypertension, and hypothyroidism? I've been struggling with these conditions, and a recent onset of immense stress has triggered it even more.
When I hear anyone struggling with stress, it really, really bothers me. Stress is something that can affect every single organ. And just like the person who just messaged there, we really underestimate what that cortisol hormone does. So when one is stressed, the body releases these cortisol. It can affect, as the caller mentioned, their thyroid. It can affect their blood pressure. It can even affect their, if it's female, it can even affect their cycles. What can be done? Well, you've already identified part of the cause, stress. So we need to treat with that. That's not an easy thing, and you need to understand, be not judgmental with yourself, give yourself that space, give yourself grace, engage in some sort of de-stressor. Think of what makes you feel happy and do more of that once it's healthy, of course. So while one may love chocolate cake, we're not going to do more of chocolate cake. While it may still make you feel happy, you can have it in little bits. Mine in things that help you detox, rejuvenate, de-stress. Be it planting a garden, be it engaging with your children or loved ones, hanging out with friends, of course, in a healthy environment. Some persons have now engaged journaling, yoga, meditation, dancing, hiking. There's so many things to engage your body in de-stressing activities. What I have found is anything in nature, 5 minutes in nature, disconnecting from your phone, disconnecting from the demands of the very quick-paced life, and you will start to feel that stress level coming down. Now, let's jump into some of the concerns you mentioned. Hypothyroid, your blood pressures being affected, all of that is treatable medically. And treatable to the point of getting you to normalize. So take that next step. See a healthcare professional. If you need to, in this case, you may need to see someone who is experienced in endocrine disorders. Start with your healthcare professional and let them refer you to the specialist if need be. But have that hope that there is light against at the end of the tunnel. There are treatment options for you. Hope that answers your question.
Right, good day, Doc. How often can one do an LFT?
Great question. So an LFT is your liver function test. And again, there's no cookie cutter. It's not the same thing for every single patient. If it's a patient, let's just say, on specific medications. So like all my patients who are chemotherapy patients, they must do an LFT every 3 months. But if it's a patient who is healthy and doing well, I am comfortable with once a year. We don't need to be doing it ever frequently. But if there's an indication for it, you may need more frequent. Essentially, if it's once a year and your values are normal, that's A-OK. Hope that answers your question.
All right. Let's see here. Good afternoon, doctor. Lovely program. How do you know when your cholesterol is higher than normal besides taking a test?
Good question. So just checking, Base, you're hearing me clearly?
Yes, loud and clear, yes.
Okay, excellent. So yes, the hematological blood investigation is the most accurate way. And we actually mentioned that here on the program, a fasting cholesterol. There are other ways that we can pick up. It may be you can have a cholesterol deposit around the eye. Sometimes you may feel tired, your blood pressure may be elevated. So all of those are other ways that you may know your blood cholesterol is elevated. But the most accurate way, and the one I would recommend, is the blood investigation.
Okay, there's a big one here. Thank you for your response, Doc. A follow-up. Can the doctor please advise on where to check regarding an appropriate doctor for myalgic encephalomyelitis? Treating
so that was
on condition of it. Checked the health center and they are unfamiliar with it. Checked 4 private neurologists and also public hospitals. Same problem. They are not aware of it and don't know where to send a patient.
I'm so sorry. You checked 4 neurologists and they all not. We just went and did an entire conversation on it. It is something that it is part of our research. Probably not a health center doctor, but definitely the neurologist. There are many private institutions. I don't necessarily want to mention one over the other on the airways, but there's several private institutions. So again, let me just bring that to the forefront because it may be something that I probably should do a Health Plus article on. And of course, get one of the neurologists that we recommend, have that conversation, right? So at the beginning of the program, someone messaged on myalgic encephalomyelitis, or it's commonly called chronic fatigue syndrome. And as we mentioned, what is necessary is very much multi-layered, multifactorial, because it's not just a neurologist. It may be a neurologist, a psychologist, even an immunologist, because it's very much autoimmune in relation. Sometimes we see this more in women than men. So even a gynecologist may have some idea of it. But yes, there are many healthcare professionals who would be familiar with it, probably not in the public sector, but more in the private sector. So I hope that answers your question, but you've given me food for thought for another Health Plus article. Hope that answers.
Good day, Dr. Mohammed. Is it normal to have a little bleeding when using enoxaparin, 60 milligrams, twice a day to treat a DVT?
Yeah. So that particular medication is one of our mainstay medications that we use for any sort of thromboembolic disorders, be it a stroke, be it a DVT, which is a deep vein thrombosis. Enoxaparin is indeed your heparins, your low molecular heparins in particular. And when you say bleeding, I'm not too sure where the bleeding is. Is it that you may have hit your foot, or you had a cut and it bleeds really easily, or you're brushing your teeth and it bleeds easily? All of this is the risk of when we put a patient on enoxaparin or your low molecular heparins, and we tell them. Now, it's again, we need to ensure that the patient is on enoxaparin to reduce the risk of a stroke, to reduce the risk of your thromboembolic disorders that can lead to not just stroke, but a heart attack or death. So it's always weighing risks. Yes, there's that risk of minor bleeding, especially if there's any sort of injury. So just keep all of that in mind. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's take this call. We have just about 9 more minutes to go. 627-3223, 625-2257. Lunchtime, doctor. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon, Doc. I want a little advice on a patient, right? When they lie on the left side, they get a kind of pain.
Now, could you speak up a little bit so we're hardly hearing you? Okay.
All right. When they lie down on the left side, they get a pain by the heart. Is it serious? But the patients now like to eat when it's late, about 8 o'clock in the night.
Thank you so much for sharing. Yes, any pain on the left side is considered serious. Any pain, be it if they're lying down, be it after they eat, any pain on the left side, please get it checked out. We want to rule out cardiovascular in nature. It may be something less serious like reflux. So at least you know what it is, but you need to get it checked out because chest pain can lead to death. Hope that answers your question.
All right, let's go again. 627-3223, lunchtime doctor with the kind compliments of Super Farm. Hello, good afternoon.
A pleasant good day. I was trying to get in Mr. Justin Job.
Justin Job. No, this is the lunchtime doctor here, miss. I don't know. You have the wrong number.
Sorry about that.
All right. No problem. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Oh, let's take a call. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yes.
Afternoon, doctor. Could you tell me what is the effect of eating and drinking at the same time?
Good question. Now, there are a lot of myths out there. One shouldn't eat and drink at the same time. You're going to put a different load on your stomach, but it's not research driven. So you can comfortably have your meals and still have either if you're drinking water. What I wouldn't advise is drinking alcohol. Alcohol and drinking at any point in time has a host of health disasters. So we want to avoid that. But normal meals, you're having your meal, you're eating, and then you want to drink your water or drink your whatever healthy drink. Nothing is wrong with that.
All right. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome. Lunchtime, doctor.
Yes, doctor. Good afternoon. The second call again. I got a lot of pain on my hip, my pelvis joint across the hand. I had to lift my left, my right foot. What do you feel is the cause of that? Thanks very much.
Thank you so much. I'm so sorry you're experiencing all that pain. Now, there are many things that could be the cause, from a nephropathy, from something as more debilitating as a TIA, transient ischemic attack, which is a minor stroke. So we want to make sure you go to the healthcare professional, you're assessed, and we get to the bottom of it. Many things can cause pain, from neuromuscular damage to compression of the nerve to arthritis to autoimmune disease. But again, we won't be able to diagnose this until someone actually reviews you yourself as a patient. Hope that answers your question.
Hello, good afternoon. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, Lanchan Doctor. My question is, could you have good sugar reading and yet still be diabetic, like you're managing it?
So yes, you certainly can, and I hope you fall in that category. And if you are diabetic and you have good sugar readings, that just mean you're managing with your medications or with your nutrition, and you're keeping it under tight control. In fact, that is a goal for all of our patients. What we want them to check is not just their fasting blood sugar, as in on the diet scan, but we want them to check something called the HbA1c. So yes, 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 you certainly can have good readings, even if you're diabetic. That just means you're doing something right. Kudos to you.
All right, let's go to the WhatsApps here, or let's take this final call. Hello, good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon, Doctor. What are the tests taking for executive medical?
So, good question. Different companies offer different executives based on the health plans. But based on the age, there are key things we must have in there. You want to evaluate the heart. You want to evaluate the kidneys. You want to evaluate the liver. And, of course, you want to evaluate the eyes. So I would suggest they must have at least certain blood tests. You want to evaluate your blood count as well. You want to have certain blood tests, an X-ray, an ECG. That's the baseline. Some go a little further and they check certain at-risk of cancers like PSA, or in the woman, they check the CA125. Both may check the CEA. And if it's an executive medical, they may even go one step further and do, say, an echo. So it really depends on what the coverage is. It depends on the company. Different companies have different coverages and what the health plan is. All in all, every year, once you're over 40, you certainly should do a comprehensive medical. Hope that answers the question.
All right, and as we get ready to wrap up, let's go over Health Plus. You were talking about the eyes today.
Definitely. So in your Guardian Health Plus, I want all of our listeners, all, every single one, to access your Guardian today. We talked about the safety of our eyes for children, especially during this summertime, this August vacation, how to treat an eye injury. Let's make sure we get our children's eyes checked. Let's also make sure that anyone who's at a screen for more hours than they need to, make sure that they are well positioned to have healthy habits for your digital screening. So not only children we looked at adults as well. And in your Guardian today, we gave certain tips. So I'm going to share that because I think it's just about, because of pandemic, it literally ended up being just about everyone who ended up being on their screen more often than not. So let's just jump into a few of those tips. One, ensure your room lighting is similar and bright enough similar to your screen. Two, let's keep the computer or your screen at least about 20 inches away. You can tilt the bottom of the screen if you need to reduce the glare. You can use artificial tears or lubricating eye drops if you're at your screen for more hours than usually a lot of hours. You can also plan to have an automated game pause. That's for those who are gaming, or if you're at your screens, have a pause on your phone where the alarm goes off. Make sure you check your eyes. And a nice little tip we've shared it over and over and over is 20, 20, 20. Every 20 minutes, look at something green 20 feet away. So 20 feet away for at least 20 seconds. That's recommended by the American Ophthalmological Association because they've found post-pandemic, they're seeing a host of persons experiencing complications with their eyes, disorders with their eyes, especially our children. So let's pay attention to our eyes.
All right, Doc, well, that's it for today. Thank you very much.
So tune in tomorrow. Again, we're going to continue. We're going to answer your questions. My heartfelt appreciation to Superfarm making this program happen for you. All of our listeners, those here in Trinidad, those outside of Trinidad, continue to spread the message of being healthy. Join us again tomorrow. Until then, be safe.
All right, thank you there very much, Doc. Of course, folks, you've been listening to The Lunchtime Doctor here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1. Sky 99.5 and Vibe City 105 FM. With the kind compliments of Super Farm, my name is Bass, and please do enjoy the rest of your day.